Okay, parachutes ready.
Boy, the things I go through to get auto loan rates as low as 1.04% APR for 36 months on new vehicles with PenFed.
You are aware that you don't have to be a military member to save hundreds on your auto loan, aren't you? Anyone can join PenFed.
As someone terrified of heights, I probably should have looked into that.
Probably.
Drop me off at the shore.
PenFed Credit Union. Visit PenFed.org/autos or call 1-800-247-5626. Advertised rates available through the PenFed Car Buying Service. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Keith Caulfield, and I am the co-director of charts at Billboard. Joining me, as always, is Billboard's deputy editor, digital, Katie Atkinson. Hi, Katie.
Hi there.
I'm actually waving at
waving.
Katie.
Waving.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you? I'm still waving.
You're still waving. there's actions that you cannot
We're
see.
We're just greeting. We're
if this
greeting
was a vodcast
other.
Or a vlog.
Vodcast? Is that a word?
Nope.
It is now.
I mean, I think vlog is a thing.
But, like, people do like, videotaped podcasts. That's a total vodcast.
Yeah.
You just invented that.
We can barely get it together to do an audio podcast. I don't know if we can handle a vlog.
Please, God, don't bring cameras in here.
A vlog. Yeah. Well, why? Do we look like crap?
You'll see my new Post Malone face tattoo if you bring cameras in here.
It says eternally under one eye, and the other one says editing.
Yes. Always be editing.
Always be editing. Well, as always, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts.
Yeah.
In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop.
Today on the show, we've got news about Kanye West, Post Malone, and the one and only Supreme Diva, Diana Ross.
And I'll take this part. plus, we've got an interview with Chromeo. Dave One and P Thug came into the office to chat about their fifth studio album, Head Over Heels. And Katie was very excited about this.
Very excited.
So stick around for that a little bit later.
But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on iTunes or your favorite podcast provider so you won't miss an episode. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit billboard.com/podcasts.
Yeah, the Chartbeat podcast that Gary and Trevor host recently had Florida Georgia Line on it.
They have some great people. I mean, people like talking about your charts.
Yeah.
Keith's specific charts.
I mean, we've got some decent people on our show, too.
That's true. I think so, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Take that, Gary and Trevor. I'm kidding. Well, let's hit some of the biggest chart news this week, according to me. First up, Kanye West notches his eighth consecutive number one album on the Billboard 200 chart as Yay bows atop the list with 208,000 equivalent album units earned in the week ending June 7th, according to Nielsen Music. Now, get this, only three acts have tallied eight number ones in a row in the chart's history. West matches Eminem and The Beatles. West has topped the list with every single one of his albums except for his debut effort, The College Dropout, which debuted and peaked at number two back in 2004. And Eminem similarly hit the top with every one of his albums except for his debut, The Slim Shady LP, which also debuted and peaked at number two. As for the Beatles, they logged their string of eight straight toppers between 1965 and 1968. Kanye and Eminem both debuted at number one with
all of these eight albums.
They debuted at number one, those eight albums. The Beatles did not, because you didn't debut at number one in the 60s.
Back in the day.
That's just not the way it worked. But still pretty cool to say that Kanye and Eminem and the Beatles all have something pretty unique in common. And you may be wondering, like, wait, haven't I heard, like, didn't so-and-so have a bunch of number ones? Like, yeah, like, you know, one person may have had more than eight, but they weren't all consecutive.
Right.
And we're also, when I'm looking at Kanye and Eminem and the Beatles chart history, I'm literally looking at, you know, you got eight in a row if eight of those things that debuted on the chart went to number one. So if you're Beyonce and you have some stray live albums that slip in there that don't go to number one,
your consecutive is gone.
We can frame it a different way and say consecutive studio albums hit number one.
Sure.
Speaking of which, before we move on, next week, Mr. West will likely yield the top slot to Dave Matthews Band as the group is on course for its seventh number one. With Come Tomorrow, industry forecasters suggest the set could launch with over 250,000 equivalent album units earned in the week ending June 14th.
Damn.
And that would be their seventh consecutive studio album to hit number one.
Wow, there it is.
They've had a bunch of live things in between that didn't go to number one, but incredibly, going from 1998 until presumably this goes to number one, they'll have all of their studio efforts will have hit number one, which is pretty crazy.
Yes.
Quiz Katie time.
Oof.
Can you name three of the seven acts that have more number one albums than Kanye West?
So back to, this is not consecutively, this is just more number ones.
Just the more number ones, period.
The first person who came into my mind, because we were just writing about this recently, was Jay-Z.
Correct. He is one of the seven that have more.
I remember reporting that, but his weren't consecutive. There's something in there.
He has a bunch of stuff in between.
Okay.
He has 14 number ones.
Wow.
I know.
That's wild. Something else. Well, Beyonce came to mind as well.
Nope, not yet.
Not yet.
I think she has six or seven now.
Okay.
Six, I think. Yeah.
Hmm. Okay, more number one albums.
We just mentioned one of them a second ago. Really popular act, kind of known as the Fab Four.
Oh, the Beatles. I didn't think we were addressing the people that we'd already mentioned, Eminem and the Beatles.
The Beatles have more.
They just have more. Because they didn't. Okay, not just the
Beatles have a total of 19 number ones.
Wow,
which is the most ever.
So like Elvis.
Elvis has 10.
Okay,
you got my what I wanted correct. You just had to name three.
Oh, good!
Seven.
Yay!
So the Beatles have the most with 19.
Yes.
Followed by Jay-Z with 14. Bruce Springsteen and Barbra Streisand with 11 each. Elvis Presley with 10, and then tied with 9 each are the Rolling Stones and Garth Brooks. And then there's a bunch of folks with 8 tying with Kanye.
That is the real upper echelon, like, of music right there. Like, the sales don't lie.
Well, next up, Post Malone's Psycho featuring Ty Dolla $ign rises 2-1 on the Billboard Hot 100 chart, giving Post Malone his second number one after Rockstar. Psycho has been percolating in the top 5 for the past 14 weeks, never going lower than number 5. It debuted in the top 5. This week, it bumps Drake's Nice For What from number 1 down to number 2, thanks to Psycho's lead in airplay. Psycho is the second biggest song on the radio airwaves this week, believe it or not, as it climbs 4-2 on the radio songs chart. Notably, Psycho climbs to number 1 on the Hot 100 in its 15th week on the list, which is the slowest climb to number 1 for a rap song since 2013, when Macklemore and Ryan Lewis's Thrift Shop took 16 weeks to get to number 1. Because usually rap songs have a much faster ascent, or they debut at number 1.
Sure.
It's unusual that rap songs have like a slow and steady climb to number 1, because, you know, usually people react very fast to rap songs.
And to your point, Psycho has been something that I've been hearing creeping into my pop radio a lot more, so that's why.
Yeah. And lastly, yes, for a lot of it's been creeping into your pop radio.
Yeah, like on pop, I'm listening to Kiss FM out here in LA.
Oh, yeah.
And you're hearing Psycho, which you didn't when it first came out.
No. It's yes, all those things that Katie just said. And lastly, it's Pride Month, and helping to kick off the celebration is the return of a gay anthem to the charts. Diana Ross's I'm Coming Out.
I'm coming.
By way of its debut on the Dance Club Songs chart in a new mashup with Ross's own Upside Down. The mashup bows at number 42 on the chart this week, giving Ross her 19th chart entry. Back in 1980, the then-new Upside Down single spent 4 weeks at number 1 on the Hot 100, while its follow-up single, I'm Coming Out, peaked at number 5.
Oh, what a time for Diana Ross. Those were great songs.
All from the same album.
Wild.
The album...
Was it called Diana, or was it called Ross?
I think it was just Diana.
Okay.
And it was produced by Chic.
Of course it was.
Produced and written by Chic.
You'll appreciate, I was listening to Sirius XM The Groove this weekend, and they were live streaming or live playing the Chic Nile Rodgers set from Bonnaroo.
Oh, cool.
And the cool thing about hearing that is that he produced and they produced so many things that, like, you know, you're like, oh, wait, that's not a Chic song. That's not, you know, like, but it's a song that, you know, was produced by Nile. And so there was just, like, this wide variety of really cool songs.
Did you, I think, I'm sure they probably kind of do the same set list. Did they do the Lady, Hear Me Tonight?
Oh, God, I love that song. Is that produced by Nile Rodgers?
It's a sample of Soup for One by Chic.
Did not know that. So Mojo sampled. Wow.
Soup for One. Because it's like soup for one. Dun, but it's like the same.
The same melody? The reason that song is so
which
great.
Is, and you know, so.
Wow.
And I remember when I saw them at.
Hyde Park, right?
Hyde Park, yeah. With British Summertime Festival. I know Chic stuff.
Sure.
And I know what Nile Rodgers has produced. But when he had the band and him do that, where they would like do a little bit of later here, he's like, oh yeah, you like that? It came from this. And he's like, soup for what? Everyone's like mind blown.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, you've known Chic all this time. You just maybe didn't know.
Oh, sure. I mean, the first rap song, Rapper's Delight by Sugar Hill Gang, samples Good Times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As we fall into a Chic hole.
Well, you know, the people listening enjoy that as
friend
well.
Friend of the podcast, Nile Rodgers.
Exactly.
Our former, he co-hosted the show
he
once.
Not just a guest, a co-host. Guest co-host.
Come back to the Five and Dime, Nile. Well, time to move on to some news, Katie.
Yeah, let's talk some news. Bonnaroo happened this past weekend, as I mentioned. But the real big headline is kind of some breaking news because we record the podcast on Monday. So here we are recording on Monday, and we just got the bombshell of the news that Ariana Grande is engaged to Pete Davidson. Her very public relationship with Pete, which started 3 weeks ago to the day.
Officially,
at least we found out about it.
I mean, for all we know, they've been dating for a year.
Well, that Mac Miller might not appreciate that.
Oh.
But they went public, you know, within the last 3 weeks, and Billboard has confirmed that they are now engaged. So wow.
These kids these days, they move fast.
They move fast.
But, you know, love at first sight, evidently.
Indeed. And, you know, we've seen a lot of, like, Instagram photos of the two of them. They also went to the Kanye Kid Cudi listening session last week in L.A.
Stephen Horowitz, who you've heard on this show before, saw them in the flesh together.
Indeed.
I don't know if they were canoodling, but they were definitely hanging out. I don't know if they were, quote-unquote, showing off their love. Sorry. This
flaunting.
Is flaunting their love. That's like, we're just making fun of dumb headlines.
We're making fun of the internet.
Yeah.
But Ariana herself is pseudo-confirmed this by going on Twitter and liking a bunch of fan tweets congratulating her on her engagement.
Yeah, by the time you guys hear this, she could have
this
already,
will be like way confirmed.
She could have already like tweeted out her registry.
Yeah, we're just now sitting with this news, so I'm sure, you know, by Tuesday or later when you hear this, this will be old news.
Total
by then.
Old news. Well, congratulations, Ariana and Pete.
Yeah, it's awesome. I like young love. Some other news. Last week on the podcast, we had Rebecca Milzoff, our Billboard on Broadway podcast host, and the Tony Awards. We talked all about those last week, and now they have happened this past Sunday. And it turns out Rebecca really knows Broadway.
She went two for two.
Yeah, we talked about the two big musical categories for the new musical and revival of a musical, and she predicted both.
Well, this is why she hosts the Billboard on Broadway podcast.
I'm like concerned. Like, if we did a Grammy podcast with her, I don't think we could guess all of the like top four winners.
No, I'm pretty sure that we've consistently not done all four. We've gotten close.
Yes. But yeah, so the big winners of those categories, the new musical award was to The Band's Visit, starring Tony Shalhoub of Monk fame.
Sure. and you said when you saw was that the performance that you were just like, oh
yeah,
my gosh, over?
Yeah, I have not seen any of these shows, as we talked about last week. And so it was all pretty new to me watching, you know, these musical numbers from them. And when Tony Shalhoub, and I believe it's Katrina Lenk is the name of the star actress in the musical, when they performed their song, I was bowled over by her. She was just captivating. It was a captivating performance, and I don't know that I've ever like been watching something where I've been so certain that, you know, she and the musical deserved to win everything they were up for, because the performance was just bowled me over completely.
Wow.
So yes, if you've not seen that, CBS actually has all the performances on YouTube.
Oh,
so I was actually able to watch the emotional highlight of the night, which was they honored the I believe it was drama teacher from Stoneman Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, which was of course the site of the Parkland, Florida shooting of February. They honored the drama teacher, and then there was a performance by the drama club singing Seasons of Love from Rent.
Hmm.
And it was like everybody in the crowd just crying, and one girl had this incredible solo vocal moment that, you know, you could see people just like reacting so beautifully to. And then, of course, the message of, you know, love in the face of such, you know, horror and hate,
right,
was a pretty touching,
wow,
you know, performance.
Huh. Well,
and then Robert De Niro said F Trump.
Right. And Once on This Island won for Best Revival of a Musical,
yes,
as well. And I think that was the only award it won the entire night.
That's true. But lot of people talked on Twitter about the fact that Alex Newell, another friend of the podcast,
former podcast guest,
he stars in the show but was not nominated. And he was the centerpiece of their performance on the Tony Awards. And after they performed, people were just like, wait, why wasn't Alex Newell nominated? Like, and then they ended up winning. So then it was really, you know, kind of like surprising that,
you know,
he wasn't.
It could be just one of those things where there were like, certain categories, there was probably a lot of competition.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, we on the show last week when we had Rebecca on, she was talking about how certain like, the best musical and best revival of a musical categories, there was kind of, like, slim pickings.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe for the performance categories, for featured actor and actresses, you know, I'm not sure if Alex Newell was billed as the star of the show,
mm-hmm,
which is, so I can't really comment. But, you know, maybe in whatever category Alex was, like, considered for, it was just a lot of competition.
Yeah. I mean, so to your point, that featured actor category is very often filled with huge celebrity names.
Yeah.
I mean, Nathan Lane won that category for
best play.
Yeah, for play, not
and
for
Andrew
musical.
Garfield won for actor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can usually, yeah. I mean, but the woman who won for The Band's Visit, she was up against like some Broadway heavy hitters.
Oh yeah.
And she was like, bye girl.
And when you saw her performance, you saw why.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
is it
time
for
to move on?
Chromeo. Now it's time for our interview with Chromeo. We had Dave One and P Thug into the office to talk all about their fifth studio album, Head Over Heels, which comes out this Friday.
Yay!
We chatted all about their collaborations on the project, including The Dream, French Montana, and Stefflon Don, and there's many more, and about all the producers they called up. They called up a who's who of funk producers who made all their favorite funk music, basically from the 70s to today, and got all of them on this project to make music for them. So take a listen to our chat with Chromeo now. Hello to Chromeo and welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much for coming in today.
Thanks for having us.
Of course. Can we start by having you each introduce yourself so the listeners can hear your voices?
Yes, I am Dave.
And I am P.
And together they are Chromeo.
That's right.
You are about to release your fifth studio album, Head Over Heels. And I feel like before we even get into the music, I have to address the amazing album cover.
Thank you.
You know, you've had a theme of beautiful women's legs on your album covers, but this time you're the ones with the beautiful legs.
Mm-hmm. And they're ours. They're
How
all
did
ours.
That idea come about?
Well, we felt like we wanted to keep the same imagery, but make it evolve in a more kind of self-aware and responsible way. We were really happy with our previous artwork, and we had gotten great feedback from it over the years, but there were always like slight rumblings of murmurs of like, you know, why are you fragmenting a woman's body? Or even like stuff as innocent as like, oh, well, do you guys like those kinds of skinny legs? Is that your type? Or stuff that never would have occurred to us, but maybe it was, I don't know, maybe we weren't as attentive as we should have been to certain, you know, kind of
sensibilities, yeah.
And also on every album cover until now, there was kind of like a dichotomy between the woman figure and us. Mm-hmm. Like on White Women, our previous album, you know, she was like walking in the middle and we were, and on this record, we wanted to kind of fuse the symbol and the artist, mm-hmm, or the subject and the object, or the artist and the muse, or whatever.
You quite literally did that.
Yeah, we did that. So, yeah. And it felt, you know, it's still somewhat provocative, but and hopefully aesthetically pleasing, but for us, it it feels like kind of a responsible coming of age.
It's fun. I feel like it's the perfect, what you just said is perfect, because it does still seem to represent the Chromio image, but like in a fun new way. So
right. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. And okay, so more importantly, the music. We've already gotten a few songs from the album so far. Can you kind of give us an idea of what the overall like mission statement for this album is in your minds?
Totally. The mission statement for this album for us was to kind of pen kind of this overarching love letter to funk music and the different kinds of funk music that have influenced us throughout the years, since we discovered funk music when we were teenagers, all the way until now. And you know, there were funky elements to a lot of music that we've listened to along the way, and we wanted to somehow integrate all of that. So for instance, you know, there's songs that pay homage to kind of like the Minneapolis funk sound, and we've got Jesse Johnson from The Time playing playing on one of the songs. Or like, you know, we were even fans of like some kind of like, you know, funky late 90s early 2000s R&B, and so we got with Rodney Darkchild co-produce a song.
Does he say Darkchild at the beginning of the track?
He did.
We
didn't keep it.
He
did.
Yeah, like you think that would be contractual with him. He's just like, if you're gonna work with me, you have to put Darkchild at the beginning of every track. Like, not so much.
There's more soulful stuff. There's more like, you know, we were big Lucy Pearl fans, and so we got Rafael Sadiq to play guitar and bass and keyboards on the song. So there's, you know, there's a lot of kind of like, you know, we love D'Angelo's Voodoo album.
So you got D'Angelo.
So we got Pino Palladino.
Yes.
You know, I was like, where's that going?
Yeah, but so the point was, you know, there's a bunch of albums, older and newer, that influenced us, and we kind of wanted to create a sum.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's also sort of, you know, go back to the real roots of funk. We made this one much more live, just a little less electronic than our previous 2 or 3 albums.
It's also because nowadays electronic music doesn't sound that electronic anymore.
Exactly.
Right. Our last album came out at the peak of EDM, and now electronic music slowed down, and it itself has evolved towards more of a live thing.
Yeah.
So it was fitting for us to just relax the sound a little bit. The tempos are
live
slower.
Live instruments, live takes.
And then weaving in some sounds and some artists from today. It's like there's French Montana on the album. There's Stefflon Don. There's, you know, there are voices from today's culture and from today's musical landscape that we wanted to bring into Chromio World.
Speaking of which, Drum is one of those people. And you performed your single Must Have Been with him on The Tonight Show. How did that collaboration come together? I mean, you talked already a little bit about wanting to bring in all these different people. Was that one of the people on your list? Like, no,
totally.
We got to get him.
Yes, yes. And when we heard his album, the album that came out a couple of years ago, we were like, okay, he's got a funkadelic side to him that people don't necessarily know. Because, you know, Broccoli was on the radio and he was kind of just, you know.
He's the cha-cha guy.
Yeah, he's the cha-cha guy. And we were like, nah, this guy's like, he's like George Clinton.
Yeah.
You know?
He's George Clinton meets ODB meets...
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a great singer, so why not explore that, you know?
And we wanted to showcase that on a song. And he could sing, you know, I couldn't get away singing that hook. I must have been high, but it's just not... But him, it makes perfect sense, you know? So.
You actually have, you know, you talked about all the collaborations you have. The Dream is on there as well.
Yep.
And you mentioned French Montana and Stefflon Don. Are these folks that you actually... knew beforehand? Were they like people like already on your cell phone?
Oh,
you're shaking your head no.
No.
So were you like calling up people like, how do I get a hold of?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
What so was that, like... that's for all those people, for the Dream, for friendship, for
manager,
all,
our manager has an ulcer.
Yeah.
I was going to say, wow.
Yeah, our manager has an ulcer.
I'm kind of curious, who was like the hardest person to like sort of get a hold of?
The Dream?
Really?
That song, man, I heard it when I was shopping the other day. I was really pumped. It just came on, and I was like, oh, this is fitting. I'm going to talk to them next week. And he's just perfect on that song.
Incredible.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And, like, again, that's a side of him that he's had a couple of songs that had that 80s feel.
Mm.
But we were like, you know, when we hear him, we hear almost like El DeBarge.
Mm.
And so we wanted to bring that out of him. And, again, it's not us reaching and trying to make, you know, a record that would sound like one of his albums or his songs. It's him jumping into our universe and just, you know, but being himself, and he wrote the whole thing and all. It was just, you know, it's a fusion. We actually really want to work more with him and maybe do like a little project or something.
Ooh. Yeah. Full-on side project, collaborative album.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's actually really cool that you mentioned, so you actually have like the literal musicians who worked on these projects you love, yeah. but then you have these modern-day versions of the musicians totally. You love. That's really just a cool concept.
Yeah, like we want it to be, because we're kind of at the nexus. You know, we've been doing this for over 10 years, and early on, we got, you know, some co-signs from like, you know, some funk royalty or whatever. And at the same time, we exist. If you look at us on, you know, at Coachella, we play the same day as French Montana. We play alongside Post Malone, all those guys. So we're part of, hopefully part of today's music conversation, but our music harkens back to other traditions. And we just want it to be like a nexus for that.
And just like present all the reiterations of funk through the ages, from the 80s to today. Every generation has had its own version of Prince, of George Clinton, and it still happens today. Drama is the perfect example. Mm-hmm. You just have to find it, extract it, you know.
And like it all has
it
a
never goes
line.
Away.
Yeah,
it never
yeah.
goes away.
It's yeah. always it's always there.
Classic.
So the world tour starts next week.
It's yeah.
Well,
24th,
it started
right.
Yeah, okay. We did a month in April, and then we were doing, you know, promo, and then
you're here.
Yeah, and we'll start again next.
You're
week.
You're technically on tour of Billboard right now. Right.
So London
super
next
glamorous.
Week, right?
Yes.
Very cool.
Are the fans who come to see you before June 15th when the album drops? Are they going to get to hear some of the new music? Are they already
yeah.
hearing that?
Yeah.
They're like, oh yeah, we've already played the whole album.
Like, no, but like, everything that's out, they've heard. They're going to hear.
We've been playing one song that hasn't been out. That's not going to be out until the album's out.
Oh yeah, it's true. And that goes over really well.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah.
So you get a little taste of it to go early.
Might any special guests from the album appear live?
For sure, yeah. I mean, we don't know. We're trying to sort it. Like, Drom does all the TV appearances with us and stuff, and yeah, absolutely. Like, when that starts happening, yeah.
So clearly the Dream will be the easiest person to get up on.
He came close at Coachella, so yeah.
You know, you also have a great new remix out of Maroon 5's Wait. And Blonde has a great mix of your song, Must Have Been, too.
Who does?
Blonde, right?
Oh, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm like,
crazy.
Who does?
Yeah, no, because we got so many remixes for Must Have Been. Like,
I'm sure.
There's like one a week coming out for the next 2 months. But like the Maroon thing, I hear everywhere.
Oh, yeah, it's big time on the radio here in LA.
That's so crazy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, I heard it, and I'm like jamming to it. I told Keith this when we were first talking about interviewing you. I heard the song, and I'm like, oh, this is like a new version of the song. Oh, I'm like really digging this. And then I look at my radio, and it says Chromeo Remix. And I was like, ah,
was
Chromeo.
Was this on Kiss? Or,
I think it was on Amp 97.1. Oh. Yeah, yeah.
That's funny. It is really funny, because she's like, wow, this is great. I wonder who... And I'm like... It's like, oh, Chromeo, oh, Figures. Like, because Katie is a big fan.
Yes, I love. But yeah, so that was, but it's a great remix. It really steps that song up. But I wondered, I was kind of curious about how that process all works. You know, how do artists come to you and say, I want to remix your song? And what do you give your blessing to? How do you decide which songs you want to remix?
We don't do a lot of remixes for other people because we don't have time.
Yeah.
Like, it takes us forever. And on the Maroon 5 thing, like, actually we share the same management as them, so it kind of came internally, but we wanted to kind of, we knew what we were going to do aesthetically to one of their songs, so yeah. it fulfilled a purpose, like, and we knew we were going to be able to deliver that. In terms of our music, like, we have lists of ideal remixers, and we reach out to them, and also when there's producers or DJs that, you know, reach out to us, we're pretty easy. Like, we'll give them the parts to the song, the stems, and they can go do their thing.
Yeah.
Chromeo is a public project.
Open source.
I was going
to
say open source.
Because I'm sorry to cut you, but we came up at a time, it's funny, like, Pete and I talk about it, like, Chromeo was born during that gap where, like, music was not selling. Mm. You know, and it was all about the blogs.
Which gap is that? We're still currently
like
in
post
that gap.
Album pre-streaming kind post of album
yeah. 2002 to 2016. I mean, now record labels make money again now.
Yeah,
that's what you mean. I just meant like sort of traditional album sales.
No, but I'm saying like the music business was, you know.
Oh yeah, everything tanked after like 2002.
Right.
Digital suddenly existed, and we didn't have NSYNC and Limp Bizkit selling a million albums a week. Yeah. Those days. Those great days.
Those days. And so, you know, blogs where our music was shared were like vital to how Chromeo kind of got popular. And a key thing about those blogs was remix culture, you know, kind of, I don't know if Hype Machine.
Oh, yeah.
It's like that was huge for us. So we stay within that culture and just encourage remixes of our songs.
Yeah.
Before we move on, I was kind of curious, has Adam or Maroon 5 like specifically said like what they think of the remix that you did?
I already liked it. I don't know.
His voice is perfect for your sound, like I thought when I heard it.
Yeah, it works.
They must have liked it because they approved it. So.
Yeah, of course.
Have you ever been jealous of a remix and thought that their production was a better fit?
For our song?
Yeah.
We've heard really good ones, but I definitely, there are remixes out there that we've heard and we were like, man, like this is almost better than the original, if not
almost
better.
Almost.
If not better sometimes.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Well, as we mentioned earlier, this is your fifth studio album. What is it about the dynamic between the two of you that keeps working, all these years later, like, 15 years later or so?
It's crazy.
sharing tasks, trusting each other, completing each other.
Purple suits.
Purple suits.
There's
respect
a purple suit.
For the purple suit.
Who doesn't want to be in the band with this guy?
Yeah.
when you talk about sharing tasks and split, like, what's an example of that? Like in a day like today, when you're doing a bunch of press, it when you go into an interview, it's like, okay, one of us is going to do more of the talking, or like I'll handle the business. I'll handle these bills over
pretty
here
much,
with management,
yeah,
or
almost, pretty much that.
Yeah,
like today,
much.
I'm on the phone. You know, while we're in between interviews, I'm on the phone doing accounting, advancing shows. He's on the phone arranging other interviews.
Man.
Pretty like, much, you know.
Yeah. Even though we have a huge team around us.
And then we eat and we're like, oh, what do you think about this interview? Oh, yeah, it's cool. Oh, that's fun. Yeah, okay, cool. Back on the phone.
So you're ordering food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
About that, you know.
We're just, yeah, and even in
about
the
that
studio.
Sushi order.
Exactly. And even in the studio, we sort of, you know, we kind of split tasks and we divide the workload in a way that where, like, what P does doesn't interfere with what I do, and we just report to each other. Mm. We're sort of accountable to each other. Somehow that works, but also, you know, it's fun. We're best friends from childhood making music together, so it's not, there's no egos there. It's not like, you know, everything's equal, and we just, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
you don't seem too.
It's to us, it's so simple that it's hard to explain.
Right.
You know? Because we just like we both have like our brains complete each other. I have a very business and strict sense of things, and he has a more artistic visual thing, and it just works.
It works.
On the computer, there's two mice. Yeah. Seriously,
really?
On the computer, there's two mice, and like I sit here.
One is the Dave mouse, and one is the
Dave
mouse.
I sit here, and there's the keyboard's here, and P's mouse is here, and we're both like.
Fighting over the cursor.
And just like an old couple. Like,
cursor.
Let me
cursor.
No. let me do this. I just want to.
Yeah, it's a lot of that. A lot of that.
Amazing. Well, we are super excited to hear the whole album.
Thank
we really
you.
Appreciate your time today.
Cool.
And good luck with the tour and everything else.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. I must have been.
Thank you so much to Chromeo for coming in. As we mentioned in the interview, I have been a big fan of theirs for a long time, so it was just a really, really fun time to have them in and talk with them and have them be so cool and, you know, just kind of like scholars of funk music. It was super fun to talk with them.
And they I think they were actually eager to do the Pop Shop, too.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
They told us they're listeners.
Yeah.
Sometimes people tell us that, and we don't know if that's true.
I don't know if I believe them.
But I'll accept it.
I'll go with it. I'll go with the fact that Josh Groban said he listened to the show once.
Tony host Josh Groban.
Yeah. Now, it's time for the chart stat of the week. As we noted earlier, Diana Ross is back on the charts, and for our chart stat of the week, we thought we'd take it all the way back to this week in 1965, when her old group, the Supremes, you may have heard of them, hit number one with Back in My Arms Again on the Billboard Hot 100. The single spent 1 week atop the June 12, 1965 dated list, and it was the trio's fifth consecutive number one on the chart. In total, the act would garner 12 number ones on the Hot 100, the most of any American group in the chart's history.
Amazing.
Amazing. Ross herself would go on to notch 6 solo number ones, including the earlier mentioned Upside Down. So there you have it. This week back in 1965, the Supremes hit number one with Back in My Arms Again.
It's really interesting, especially when we've been talking about the Beatles on this very podcast, the Supremes have the most Hot 100 number ones of any American
group.
Oh, American.
That
there
caveat.
It is. Never mind.
The Beatles
guys.
Have the most of any act. With
I know.
20.
I was like, wait, that can't be real. But American.
Yeah. American
there it
group.
Is. Well, this is just in case the listeners weren't listening closely.
Yeah.
I'm like, helping them out.
Like Katie.
Yeah.
That's all right.
I can't read. I'm not an editor for a living. I don't look at details and examine them for a living.
Dun, dun, dun. What song should we go out on? Something made the Supremes, maybe? Or something
from... Oh, yeah.
I
love the Supremes.
Well...
Keep Me Hanging On?
I was going to suggest either that or Someday We'll Be Together.
I love both of those. So, like, you know. Go, Keith, go.
Someday We'll Be Together.
Bye, everybody.